Well, hello and welcome, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. Welcome to the Heal It Show, where we explore how life's deepest wounds can become the very soil for your transformation. You know, all of us encounter seasons of struggle, you know, moments that seem unbearable and just maybe they feel like unending to you. Yet within those very challenges lies the hidden potential for awakening, for service, and for the kind of growth that not only heals us, but uplifts us and uplifts humanity. You know, true transformation begins when we encounter pain, when we encounter injustice, when we encounter loss. But, you know, it's not the end of your story. You know, if your story's still there, it's just not the end, right? You have an end. You know, if you're still in it, there's still more to learn. There's still more to grow, to experience, to step into becoming that presence who you really are at the deepest part of yourself. You know, when I woke up in 1992, I heard this little voice that said, you got to feel the pain to make the change. And I didn't know what that was in the beginning, but I realized today, and you know, it's the voice of courage. It's the voice of the soul that was speaking to me, that continues to speak to me every single day. And, you know, there's a lot of things I don't like to do, but I do them anyway, okay? I do them because I realize that they help me to develop willpower, to develop strength, to develop courage, to develop fortitude. They test my values. Sometimes it's testing my values, what my beliefs are, my values are, all from feeling this pain, right? You know, and why did that little voice say you gotta feel the pain to make the change? Because at that time in my life, I was chasing pleasure. I was on the opposite. If it feel good, do it. You know, no matter what. You know, it didn't matter. You know, if it hurt somebody else, if it hurt myself, I was just chasing pleasure. Don't do that. Okay, take it from me. That does not work. What does work is what we're going to be talking about today. I have a very special guest today. You know, his name is Oswald Newbold. I'll be introducing you to him in a second. But, you know, he embodies truth, you know, and he is a man that has lived through pain and struggle and heartache and heartbreaks and lived to come out of it a purified, refined man. And he'll tell you his story. But, you know, sometimes the darkest hours are right just before the dawn. Well, sometimes those darkest hours go on for a while, right? You're like, where is the dawn? Where is the dawn? This has been going on for months or years, or in some cases, decades, right? Well, it's always a call for us to change, to grow, to develop, to evolve, always. So if you're in struggle, if you're in pain, this is a great show for you, because we're going to explore some of the, the darkest moments maybe of life where Oswald has gone through and helped many men who have been incarcerated to change, to grow, and to evolve. And these stories are important because they impact who we are. They impact us. They impact you. So I know you're going to be able to relate to the story. And when I take a break, I'll come back here and we'll have my very special guest talking about his story. So we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everybody. This is your host, Kendi Foster. I have my very special guest, Oswald Newbold. Oswald, welcome.
How are you doing? Thank you for having me, Ken.
Yes, great to have you. I'm so glad you're here. You know, your work, your book, you know, you got some message of the truth, her hope, courage for the world here. So I'm looking forward to a deep dive in there. For those of you that don't know Oswald, he's a nationally certified mediator trained by the National Institute of Mediation and the Community Mediation Network, starting in 2008. Through a Florida Supreme Court approved program, he mediated prisoner disputes to reduce tension and violence, launching a mission to resolve conflicts of any size. And as part of the result of that, he has a new powerful book out. It's called Breaking Chains, Building Future, a collection of firsthand accounts from individuals incarcerated. And through these deeply human stories, the book explores the emotional toll of long prison sentences, the challenges of reentry and transformative power of resilience. Wow. I mean, and of course you're working with the youth right now. You have a youth initiative too that we can touch on. So that's why I wanted to have you on my show. I was like, you're doing some cool things in the world, man.
Okay. Thank you. I don't know if it's cool, but I just feel I'm doing my part.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know if it's cool either, you know, but I think that it's inspiring for people that maybe would like to change, would like to maybe grow and, you know, have a better life. That's what my guess is.
Yes.
So what inspired you to take on a leadership role in the criminal justice reform and reentry services?
Actually, it was my lived experience that formed me to go into leadership. After going through the justice system, and I saw the gaps in there in terms of the courts, incarceration, and even reentry on the back end, I made a vow to myself to do whatever I can when I was released to be able to help to make the system better. So that my lived experience led me into my leadership.
Yeah, I love that. And I'm not sure we're going to go with the conversation today. Well, I do know where we're going, but one, a little side note, you know, I know that, you know, there's Germany has some, you know, some of the European countries has some pretty different incarceration systems where they're really about reform, they're not punitive systems. And, you know, people are assigned counselors. I don't know how it is in our system now, but they're assigned advocates when they first come in, and they're assigned goals to grow, to learn, to evolve as they go through the system. And, you know, and instead of just locking people up and, you know, hoping they'll change, you know. So I don't know what your experience is with that, but you probably have a lot more than me.
Yeah, so it's good you'll say that, because like Norway and other countries, it's a few countries that they make your reentry start the day you come in. They walk you through that. They actually focus on rehabilitation and becoming better. And it works because they have a very low recidivism rate. America, we're a little more challenged because we're dealing with mass incarceration and limited funding, and you pretty much have to strain yourself out on your own in prison. And that's not good, because our ways of thinking is what got us there.
Well, it is. And you know, it's I know that I worked with the head of the Department of Prisons up in the state of Idaho.
Right.
Met with him a little bit. And, you know, I know that they're looking at models like you just said, Norway, Germany, Sweden, because they realize that the system we have is not sustainable. It's just, you know, if you don't reeducate, you don't help people change their beliefs and the way they're thinking. It, you know, like you said, the recidivism rate, I don't know what it is in the United States. Do you know what it is right now?
That's a big conversation in itself, because everyone doesn't count recidivism the same. Some count and say, did they commit a new crime and got a new charge? Do you count a technical violation? Some say, no, you don't count a violation of parole because they didn't commit a new crime. But if you send a guy back for 15 years, that's a sentence. So how do you count it? And so the recidivism rate is, the numbers is pretty skewed depending on who's gathering it, to be honest. But I will share this about recidivism. Let's just say hypothetically, Ken, that 6 out of 10 people go back to jail or prison. That's just a hypothetical.
Yeah.
My problem is we've been tracking recidivism in the negative for decades. So if 6 out of 10 go back, that's not what we need to focus on. We need to look at what the 4 did to stay out and duplicate that to reduce the 6. We never had a conversation about the positive, but we focus on the negative. And that's why I think recidivism continues to fuel like it do, because we're not mimicking what the people that didn't go back are doing or have done.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you want to hold down a population, you know, teach them to focus on the negative. Okay. Teach them to focus on everything they did wrong. You know, teach them to focus on blame, shame, teach them to focus on how they need to revenge their wrongs, you know, teach them those things. And, you know, they'll stay small. They won't grow. They won't, you know, they won't expand. They won't tune into their, to what that spark that we all have, that God self that we all have that it is in us. You know, it'll be covered up with misinformation, misbeliefs, wounds of the past, and you know, it's hard to break free. So I think you're onto something there. I think you're right on. Yeah. So let me ask you, getting back to you a little bit, you know, what was your defining moment on your journey that shaped your purpose and direction today?
My defining moment, it was many, but my defining moment, believe it or not, and much as I hate to say it, it was a gray hair. I had a, when it was all.
That'll do it. I know about those. Yeah.
That'll do it. But being honest, I remember when I had a head full of hair, all black, everything. My first gray hair, I stayed in the mirror so long because it signified that I was getting older in a place that I didn't want to be. Mm. And that was a real defining. I mean, I looked at that like hard for a while. So that in itself was somewhat of a defining moment. But I believe the real make it or break it moment for me was when my last grandparent passed. Because I didn't know life without my grandparents. And once my last grandparent passed, I realized life was going to be on me. And I'm going to have to figure out how I'm going to make it through life. And I got to walk through life the right way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you said something really important. You said that you pulled the gray hair out at a place that you didn't want to be. So you were in an environment or in a place you didn't want to be. And I think, man, I about to ask all my audience out there, are you in a place where you don't want to be? You know, and if so, for whatever reason, okay, and that we're not just talking environment. Maybe you're in a place you don't want to be financially or in a career or in a health situation, you know. Only you could change it, right? I mean, who else is going to change that, man? Yeah. Who else is going to change it? Is the doctor going to change it? Is the warden going to change it? Is the minister going to change it? I don't think so. Right.
Yeah. And that's good. And that's good because, Ken, as you were speaking, it made me think of something. I always talk to people about prison, but I'm not talking about a physical prison. We become prisoners of certain lifestyles. We even become prisoners of certain streets. There are certain streets or states, lines we don't go past. We'll just become a prisoner of even our own chain of thought and nothing else matters. So we have to, when I talk about prison, and when you were saying some people, it could be financial, it could be something else.
Sure.
Yeah. We'd be locked up. Our body could be walking through a free society, but our mind is so locked up that we can't even free ourselves and our spirit sometimes.
Yeah, no, we can't. And, you know, people paint prison bars on the inside before they show up on the outside. Okay. And that's what we're talking about here, right? And, you know, I've been a life coach for 30 years. And, you know, I always like to have people assess where they are. Like, you know, scale of 1 to 10. Where are you in your health? Where are you in your finances? Where are you in your career? You know, are you doing what you want? Do you have the money to do what you want? You know, are you in an environment where you want to be? And if not, then you can either stay a victim or you can become a victor. That's it. There's really no other choices. But victors, you know, here's what I've learned too. You know, it's let me just take weight, okay? I'll just use that one. I could use anything. But you know, it's hard if you're overweight, if you're obese, it's hard to go through life, you know. It's hard to get in and out of vehicles, it's hard to shop, it's hard to go to the doctors all the time because I know you're on medication, your bones and your feet, and you know, you're not feeling it. It's hard to do all that stuff. And it's also hard to say, no, I'm going to learn how to read labels. I'm going to go and fast. I'm going to learn how to eat. I'm going to hire a nutritionist. I'm going to go to the gym. I'm going to walk. It's hard to do that. You know, it's hard. Nobody said life's going to be easy. So I think you got a choice to make, right? Which side of hard do you want to be on?
And I'm in total agreement of that. I always tell people, success takes courage. A lot of times we want the end result, but we don't want to go through the process. We don't have the courage to go through the process or to stick to it. And you're right. To get the results we want in life, it takes courage. We have to want to do it. And I think a lot of people fear failing, just even attempting to try to do it. So, yes.
I like that. Well, listen, I got to take a quick break, and I want to talk about the book. I want to talk about, you know, that what inspired you to write the book, what are the barriers that, you know, that people have, that have been incarcerated, what are the barriers they're experiencing coming out? A whole bunch. I got so many questions for you. So we'll take a break, and we will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If you see the letters AIDA, do you immediately think of the opera by Verdi? AIDA is also an advertising acronym for those iconic Mad Men days. A is for attention, I is for interest, D is for desire, A is for action. This process is a timeless truism for making a sale. Fortunately, if your product or service is health-related, we can offer you guaranteed access to a global audience with a high interest in health, healthy lifestyle, and contemporary well-being. UKHealthRadio.com has a regular monthly audience of around 1.5 million health-conscious people. And Health Triangle, its award-winning monthly magazine, has around 20,000 paying subscribers. Find out more about both at UKHealthRadio.com. Let's all put health first.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena-sensitive care pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena-sensitive care pads with a skin comfort formula online and in stores now.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The experiences that you've lived, right, with your professional expertise, and you know, and putting all that together to change policies, for, you know, to advocate for change in policies. How do you do that?
For me, I take my experience going through the system, going through the justice system. I leverage that by the things that I saw, as I mentioned earlier, the things where I saw where there was a gap or things that I feel are unjust. I just devoted my life to doing these things here. So I connect and collaborate with other organizations that's on policy reform, and it's not easy. I'm telling you, it's easy to say, but it's not easy to get policy changes. And that's pretty much how I do it. It's no, I'm not a one man island. So I do believe in collaboration, but I seek policy, and also I pour into people, because policies won't be shaped a certain way unless they get a certain behavior that justifies them doing a certain policy. So also I pour into people, but I pour into the policy side also.
Yeah. Yeah. Do we have a system that's actually working, the prison system? Is it actually working? Or
it depends on which side of the system you're on. Those who are benefiting financially from it will say it's working, but to those who are trapped behind the bars and gates would say no. I see it, it's a broken system. It's behind the times. It's not in a 2025 society. The U.S. prison system is running so behind too far. And we call it rehabilitation. You was hitting on it earlier. So when we're talking about Norway and Sweden and Germany and them other places, they get it. They moving in modern times. How do we take somebody through this system, make them better, so where they go into the community and we don't have to deal with them again? Now we got the next person that we need to help improve. So it's a broken system, but it's a beneficial system in America.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, we have, you know, one of the things that I just thought was amazing here this last 2 weeks was when Erica Kirk was speaking about her husband that passed, and Charlie Kirk. And then she went on to talk about the fellow that had murdered her, assassinated her husband. And she said, "I forgive you." No. You know, this is a, and I want to tie this back in the prison system. We have a punitive system, We have a system based on old values and old mores that says we need to punish you. You need to hurt just like we hurt. In fact, we want you to hurt more if you created a crime. And, you know, that's not any, I mean, I'm talking about the defining a moral system that we need to rechange to, because unless we change how we think immorally, we can't change the system itself, because the system's built around, like I said, you know, do the crime, serve the time, you know, an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth, you know, you will serve, you know, it's that stuff. And we have to change, that thinking, which is one of the reasons I like your book. Because if we don't, we're just going to get more and more people, you know, we're basically training them how to be institutionalized instead of how to be vibrant, contributing members.
Yeah. And I'm thinking about something as you was talking, Ken. Is it really they're a criminal, or is desperation leading them into crime? Like, for instance, I tell people being born into poverty is trauma. Being born to parents that have substance use challenges is trauma. And things like that. For some people, they're not even trying to be a criminal. They're just trying to make, they desperate to just get through life sometimes. And now going back to crime, and we were talking about the system, there's laws on the book that I will feel, I don't even want to say feel, they are extreme. Like, for instance, in the state of Florida, they have a law called a habitual driving offender. If you get caught driving with a suspended license 3 times, if it's suspended or revoked, and you get caught 3 times with it, that's 5 years in prison.
Oh, goodness.
So let's look at that in context. Yeah. You got 3 suspended driving licenses. They sentence you to 5 years in prison. They're going to put you on the bus with the person that committed murder, the rape, the robbery, and there go you with your traffic violations. Y'all going to be chained and go the same way. They don't differentiate you from anybody else just because you had traffic violations. And now you got the felony on your record. And you're now what society, once they see felony, you're a criminal.
Yeah. Well, you know, what is a criminal? You know, okay, listen, we know there are certain people that are probably not, you know, there's psychopaths at the extreme that are not going to change. They're not going to do anything different. They're going to keep hurting themselves and other people, and they probably need to be incarcerated. But that's an extreme. Most people, and here's the other thing, you know, up until 20 years ago, before neuroscience came in the picture, we thought that the brain was static. We thought that, you know, whatever you learned, you can't change. Okay. It's going to be the same way. We know that that's all made up. The system probably hasn't reflected that yet, but we know that we can change, we can grow, we can evolve, we can help people. And, you know, like you said, you know, there are, I mean, I think of the person that you just mentioned, that may be somebody that, you know, they had to, you know, they're trying to provide money for their family, so they're out there driving, you know, they didn't have the money to go down to the DMV or Department of Motor Vehicles to, you know, to pay for the license. We don't know the circumstances, but we know that we've got antiquated laws. We know that we've got a system that's punitive, and we have a lot of tools today. I mean, we have lots of ways that people can learn online, offline. There are lots of people that love to come in the system and be able to teach people, to help them to grow and learn. But are we allowing that? Right. That's the question.
We're behind the times where we should be with our criminal justice system. And in terms of rehabilitation, it's punitive. It's not rehabilitative. It's actually punitive. And that's where the problem is. That's why we had a recidivism. That's why we had a cycle. So individuals have to be strong and say, I'm not going to devote my life to this again. Or even they might not even was devoted their life to it. It's just, how do I do better when people took me through a system that all they did was try to break my spirit every day? If you want to do something, if you want to break a man's spirit, take all his hope away.
Take all his hope away. Yeah, exactly. Well, you and I are here to give hope. So There is hope, and you know, I'm hoping the message gets to somebody that needs to hear it. Listen, I'm wondering, let's talk about the people that have been incarcerated, because you wrote the book. Let's put the book on the screen real quick. It's called Breaking Chains and Building Futures, and it's a powerful read. Why did you write it, first of all?
Well, I was invited to participate in writing this book. Dr. Stanley Andreessy actually invited me. He invited 13 other co-authors to participate in the book. And it was a selection process, and he felt the stories that could be the most impactful, inspirational, those the ones he went with. So I was just thankful to be a part of that collective of co-authors that's helped write this book.
When somebody reads the book, Breaking Chains and Building Futures, what are they going to walk away with?
Oh, it's so many different things. And now you have everything from challenges to the criminal justice system, to people dealing with redemption, inspiration, stories of overcoming. It's so much in education, the power of mentorship. It's so many different. It's layered in there.
Yeah. Good. And so, the authors that he selected, what would you say the main kind of passion of everybody is? Why are they doing this? Why are they putting the stories out in the world?
I don't know everyone's why, but one of the things I do know, when you've been through the system, a lot of times you lose your voice. So I think for most people to be able to be a part of this book, it gives them their voice back. And when they're giving their voice back, and they want for their experience, and when they get their voice back, they want to help others so that they don't necessarily make the same mistake that they made.
Yeah.
Going through the system. So I think it's a tool to teach others, to help others elevate, to help them avoid certain pitfalls. But it also is a part of the person who have been through the system. It's helped them reclaim their voice back.
I love that. You know, when we have trauma, and I believe prison is a trauma in itself.
Yeah.
When we have trauma, a lot of times we start to define ourselves by that trauma, right? Whether it's childhood trauma, whether it's incarceration, you know, whether it's, you know, maybe you got an Oldsmobile, and you total your car. Now you're somebody that totals cars. We start to identify ourselves with those things, as opposed to looking at them and realizing that is the past. Past doesn't exist now. People say, well, yeah, it does. You know, they've labeled me a felony. I can't get a job. Well, you know, you gotta look and re-identify yourself as, who is it that you truly are? Who is it you want to be? Who is it that you're stepping into becoming? Okay. Because if you keep identifying yourself by labels that other people put on you, or you put on yourself, you're going to just stay stuck. Nothing's going to happen.
And Ken, it's I'm going to share a true story, something that just happened yesterday. I went on a facility tour at a prison yesterday, and it happened to be a prison that I served time at. So I was inside of a wing, one of the dorms. They took us to the wing that the guys, they participate in a higher education in prison. All the guys in there are in college right now. That's incarcerated. And they was just sharing how education is going to help them, and they are proud to be working on their degrees. They was just going. And one of the guys speaking say, you know, great people do come out of incarceration and do great things. And I let it go. So they didn't know that I had a story, but I had asked the warden. I say, warden, could I say something to them? Can I drop a jewel with them? He say, sure, go ahead. And when I told the guys, I say, I know that greatness does come out of this place. And we was in the dorm I stayed in. I pointed to the room that I was stayed in for 7.5 years. I say, that room right there, I was assigned there 7.5 years. And I know greatness. Not only they come from out of incarceration, they come out of this wing y'all living in. And they didn't know, so they saw hope that we can do right there in that moment. Even the staff, everybody was like kind of blown away that, wow, they didn't even know, because they see me only in my professional posture. So people be needing to see that. And the guys was just so inspired just to know that somebody made it. And like guys was like, I just got to shake your hand because I needed to see this.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what we need in our prisons. We need hope. We need you to go back time and time again and tell that same story, you know, because listen, here's the thing, you know, greatness not only comes out of the prison, greatness is in the prison. Okay. There is a greatness within every man in that prison. It's in there. It may be buried, you know, under delusion. And, you know, we all have this spark of the divine. We have this soul in us, right? And that soul is perfect, but it's covered up with, like I said, hurts of the past, wounds, misinformation, disinformation. All this stuff covers it up. And when you can start to peel back the layers and start to get to the truth of who you really are, you could do amazing things. You know, I say this through my own experience, man. You know, I think pain is the greatest motivator of men. And you heard me on the monologue. It's the greatest motivator of me. You know, I didn't learn through pleasure. Maybe somebody does out there. You know, it's pain and pleasure. Some people learn from setting goals and accomplishing great things, and they learn something from that. Me, I seem to be on the other side. I had to go through a difficult time, and then I like, oh, I get it. This is what I need to do to change, to grow, to learn, to evolve. If we could bring that message into our prison system, you know, you're there because you created you broke a law, you against the system, right? But that doesn't mean you're dead. That means that this is the time for you to fire up, really, you know. And I know I'm saying it. I'm not incarcerated. I know that people could listen and go, God, you're full of crap. But I think there is a part of us that really knows the truth when we hear it. And I'm trying to reach out from that point. Let me ask you this. What are the biggest barriers that formerly incarcerated individuals face upon reentry into society?
The two biggest barriers is housing and employment. And that's nationwide. Those are the two biggest barriers. When you're looking for, let's say you're looking for an apartment, you could be looking for a studio or one bedroom. When they run the background check, they don't suppose to discriminate against you because you have a background. They would never say, well, we're not going to rent to you because you have a felony. They're going to probably say, well, your credit score wasn't high enough or something came up. Whatever it is, the barriers is housing and employment. And it comes back to the background.
Interesting. Hey, I have a question. I never thought of this question before. Can someone, when they're incarcerated, build their credit score?
No, because you can't have a credit card. What does happen, and I could say what happened for me, let's say it depends on how long you're gone.
Yeah.
Like for me, because after 7 years, I didn't have a credit, no credit file anymore. Or especially after 10 years. So having no credit is not good, but not having any credit is better than having no bad credit.
Okay.
You could build faster coming out. Right there, but it's kind of difficult when you're in because you're a property of the state and prison system is so punitive to unless one of the things some people do when they get closer to near the end of their sentence, if somebody has good credit, they'll let them add them on to there.
Yeah.
To help pull them a little bit. That is one of the methods some people use, yeah. But it's hard to just outright build it on your own.
Yeah.
While you in.
Yeah, no, I understand that now. Yeah, okay. And, you know, there are credit cards out there that people can buy, you know, you can put, $25 into your credit account and, you know, and then you can use that $25. I don't know what they call those, but they're out there. But I guess the other part would, you know, I guess would be a family member that, you know, that would.
You would need somebody to do it, help you out with
help
it.
Help you out.
It's hard for you to do it. Now, if you have a responsible family member, they could work some things out for you. Because actually, I did. My brother helped me because our father had passed not too long before I came home. And my brother was helping me out. So it would take somebody in your life. So the answer is yes, you can build it while you gone, but it would take somebody out there responsible to help you out to do it.
Well, you know, I moved to New Jersey a few years back, and I was moving into my house, and we needed to find some movers. And I hired this company, and one of the movers I got to know, he'd been incarcerated, and you know, he got to trust me. You know, he liked who I was, and I liked who he was. And you know, he told me that eventually, told me he had murdered someone, and that he'd spent 7 years in, you know, his manslaughter. I guess he's in 7 years, and kind of like you. And then I decided to take him on. I decided to give him some free coaching and to start to help him with his purpose, with his direction, and give him some inspiration. So we worked together for about a year. Sure, you know, what happened with him is he eventually became he got married, he became a minister, and he you know, changed everything, changed a bunch of other people's lives, right? And the reason I tell that story is, you know, it's not about me being so great. It's about the human spirit, when we could be of service. Service is that life is chiefly service. And I believe that when you can be a service to another human being, you know, in jail or out of jail, you know, I just think it helps us grow as individuals.
Yes, it is. I mean, That's prophetic in itself. When we put here on earth to serve, I think many people miss that part right now. To love and serve. I mean, we could get into our own selfish chains of thought, but me, I feel that I'm a servant leader. So what can I do to help you is the position I live by these days.
Yeah, exactly. So how can we serve those that are coming out of prison? You're an advocate, you know, to help them with the housing and the employment. What is in place right now? I guess that's a big question. It probably depends on the state, the city, the community. Yeah,
I think more than federal level and more than state level, I think that what we could start, we need to start locally, like with our cities and counties, or parish, or wherever your state may have, see if they come up with some programs that help. And then, because what'll happen when you have a local program that's successful, other municipalities start to mimic it. And then when the state see it catch on, then maybe you could get the state to legislate. But a lot of times we go to the top and legislators just be too afraid to touch it, because it's an unpopular population. When you saying, who are we trying to do this for? They'll do stuff for kids. They'll do it for the elderly, disabled, women. But like when it comes to that population, it's rough. Housing is, even when you haven't been in trouble, housing and employment is still a challenge for people. I think, but it's another side to it. We could try to help people, but people also have to help themselves. And what I mean by this, you can't go do, hypothetical number, go do 12 years, you didn't take one program.
Yeah.
Now you saying, hey, help me get a job. And you saying, well, what can you do? Well, I was in the streets before I got locked up. I've never had a legitimate job. So you never had a legitimate job, and you not in 12 years, you thought to take one class.
Yeah.
Like, help us help you. Because I work in the field of reentry right now, and we see that a lot. They want this top tier job, but you haven't invested anything in to qualify for it.
Yeah.
And so I think that we could fight for things, but let's say we fight for, they give employment opportunities. Yeah. How would people do in the workforce? Just because you came out, you are out here now, you're getting a real check. So that means you got to be the professional just like it. You don't get a pass. You got to be able to handle your own in there. So how do you do that? So not only is after people incarcerated, that's why I go into the prisons. You said it earlier, and you saw my Norway and Sweden. They reentry starts from when they first get locked up. So you have to start that process then. By the time they get out and they slam the gate behind them, it's too late. And you have to remember, I always tell people, when people are locked up, you only a block or a block and a half away from everything. It's a dorm there for you to lay your head, the chow hall over there to go eat, the laundry over there to get some clothes, go over there to see the nurse for medical. You're a block and a half away from everything. But when you get out here and you get out, there go them three meals, there go clothes to put on your back. Now you have to figure out how the life just got real. You got to figure out how to survive out here. And that's what I think people, in our mind, You see it, I'm going to be all right. We got all of these shortcuts we're going to take, but them shortcuts don't work like that when we get out.
Yeah, no, I get that. Wow. Well, I have a solution. I'm going to tell you about it when we get back and from the break, and then you can tell me if it makes any sense. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one super supplement brand, help you achieve that in the most convenient and comprehensive way possible. Clean, premium ingredients scientifically formulated to work in synergy to support immunity, energy, joints, heart health, sleep, emotional balance, and more. Benefit from the power, purity, and positivity of our award-winning powder sachets or our therapeutic capsule range. Use code RADIO15 at reviveactive.com and save 15% off today. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back, everybody. Talking with Oswald Newbold, and we're talking about his new book that's out there. And I hope you'll pick up a copy. It'll support him, his mission, and everything else, called Breaking Chains, Building Futures. And it's on the screen again, but for my listening audience, Breaking Chains, Building Futures. And you can get it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble, wherever great books are sold. So I hope you'll pick that up. So my solution, one thought is to have, when people enter the system, that maybe depending on the length of stay, that they would have, they would also not only have to serve their time, they'd have to get credits. Okay, so you might get, right, you know, it's probably been talked about, but you know, you get 3 credits for taking the class on, maintaining your health. I don't know. You get 3 credits on taking a class about welding. You get 3. You know, it's kind of almost like a college where they're going in to learn to grow. And depending on the length of time would be the number of credits you would need to have to also be released. So you get released for your time, but you also, you know, you're not just there vegetating, right? Yeah. So I don't know. Has that been discussed?
So here's the challenge with that, Ken, the reality.
Sure.
These get tough on crime laws on the book. Like in some states, they have what they call the 85% sentencing guideline. You have to do 85% of the sentence. So
there's only
credit you're going to get is up to the 15%, because the law say you have to serve 85% of whatever the sentence is.
Yeah.
The other challenge is one of the most underfunded parts of the prison system is the teachers, the educators. Like, it's hard to get people in to want to teach the classes, because the positions are under, I don't want to use the word underfunded, the wage, it's not even a livable wage. And the average prison in the average state is usually way out in a rural area. So most times the person who has the credential to teach the class is going to have to commute from far away.
Well, that's where technology comes in, and that's where we can take, have classes on Zoom, we're going to have Zoom classes, you know, right into a main hall where, you know, prisoners maybe don't have access individually to the screens, but...
Here's the thing, Ken. Technology is great to us out here, but the prison system's still running like Fred Flintstone in some places. So when we talk about Zoom, that's an easy thing for us. But every place is not up to date. Or the punitive mindset.
Yes.
Y'all don't deserve to be on no screen and some.
Yeah, don't deserve to learn or to grow. But that, unfortunately, that mindset is antiquated, and that mindset releases people back into your community, okay, with no growth, no education. They go in and they come out the same way. Is that what you want? I don't think so. Or worse. They come out worse.
And it's already said that 95% of the people that become incarcerated do get out at some point, whether it's a short time or long time. 95% of the people that become incarcerated do get out at some point. Wow. So they will be somebody's neighbor. Yeah.
Be your neighbor. So, you know, if you're in that mindset that says, yeah, we got to punish them. Well, okay, sure. You know, can we do both? Can we punish and educate and help people learn and grow and tap into the best version of themselves? Why not do both? Okay. I think there's a compromise here. You know, we have to upgrade the system. We have to stop this antiquated way of.
And then technology, I'm with you all the way. Technology allows us to be able to reach in and help people get the tools that they need. But again, the prison systems, a lot of time when they get the technology, you can't even keep a signal.
Yeah.
Like they use the bottom of the bottom. It's almost, and now this is like kind of one of the untold stories about the system. So most times to be a correctional officer, all you need is to not have a felony on your record and be able to pass the officer training they need. The problem is, think about this, this human psyche now. Here's a guy that's in going to college, working on this bachelor's degree. Some might even work on a master's degree. I'm a correctional officer and all I got, and that's it. So sometime you have it, one of the untold truths is they see the prisoners going, they get a training, they're coming up. You got more than the officer. So now you have a problem even getting to the class because they're better at you. You can't be the next person because
So we need an equal opportunity prison system where the officers have access to higher education, the prisoners have access to higher education, and we got some work to do. But listen, if we don't talk about it, it's never going to change. So I'm so glad you're putting it out there and talking about it. I'm out of time today as well, but.
That's a great conversation.
Well, it's a great conversation. We need to have more of these conversations. So the book is Breaking Chains, Building Futures. I hope you all take it up. Go support Oswald. Go support this cause. We need to have these conversations in greater and greater ways across the country. Oswald, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you being here.
And thank you for having me, Ken.
All righty. And for all of you that are enjoying this show, again, we encourage you to go to our YouTube channel and go ahead and subscribe there. And also, you know, if you put focus, attention, a little love in the mix, a little persistence, you can pretty much heal anything, whether it's our prison system, whether it's our bodies, whether it's our careers, whether it's our families or relationships, you can pretty much heal anything. You got to make the effort. Just get on the path. It's a journey. Healing is a journey. Okay? Nobody said it'd be easy, but what's the alternative? Right? All right. Till next time, have a blessed week.